I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Completing Sweden's accession to NATO is an historic step that benefits the security of all NATO allies at this critical time. It makes us all stronger and safer.
Turkey's agreed to drop its opposition to Sweden joining NATO, which is holding a major summit in Lithuania, just 20 miles from the border of Belarus. We'll speak to the head of Sweden's oldest peace organization, which opposes NATO membership. We'll also look at Ukraine's push to join NATO with the nation's Katrina Vandenhoevel. Then, as another heat wave descends on Texas, the migrant death toll is increasing.
When you take water away from people, you know, what are you saying? You prefer for migrants to die? The heat has been very, very intense, you know, with a heat index getting up to 115 to 120 almost on a daily basis.
We'll also look at Governor Greg Abbott's law that just went into effect, eliminating water breaks for construction workers in Texas. And we'll talk to a TV meteorologist in Iowa who resigned his job after receiving a death threat over his reporting on the climate emergency.
I'm Chris Gloninger, the former chief meteorologist at KCCI in Des Moines, Iowa. I went to Iowa so I could talk a little bit about climate change with my audience, but it did result in a death threat last summer.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Leaders of Western military powers have gathered in Vilnius, Lithuania, for NATO's annual summit, with Russia's war in Ukraine central to the discussions. On the eve of the summit, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said he would drop his opposition to Sweden's bid to join NATO, clearing the way for its accession as the alliance's 32nd member. Following the announcement, Biden administration says it will move ahead with the transfer of F-16 fighter jets to Turkey, pending congressional approval. Earlier today, President Biden spoke briefly to reporters alongside NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg.
And this historic moment, the adding of Finland and Sweden to NATO is consequential, and your leadership really matters.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is scheduled to meet with President Biden at the NATO summit Wednesday. Ahead of the meeting, he accused NATO members of ignoring Ukraine's bid to join the alliance, writing, quote, "It's unprecedented and absurd when time frame is not set neither for the invitation nor for Ukraine's membership. It seems there's no readiness neither to invite Ukraine to NATO nor to make it a member of the alliance," he said. We'll have more on the NATO summit and Russia's war in Ukraine after headlines. Russia launched missile and drone attacks on Ukraine's capital Kyiv in the southern port of Odessa overnight. The airstrikes followed a Russian attack on a humanitarian aid distribution center in southeastern Ukraine that killed seven people. In Russia, the Kremlin said Monday the embattled leader of the Wagner mercenary group met in Moscow with Russian President Vladimir Putin last month, 5 days after the Wagner forces launched a failed mutiny. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said Wagner chief Yevgeny Prigozhin was part of a three-hour meeting on June 29th involving nearly three dozen other Wagner leaders.
The commanders provided their account of what happened. They stressed the fact that they are loyal supporters and soldiers of the head of state and the commander-in-chief. They said they were ready to carry on fighting for their motherland.
President Biden's declared a state of emergency in Vermont, where authorities have closed off downtown areas of the capital, Montpelier, after 2 months' worth of rain fell in less than 48 hours. Vermont's rivers are expected to crest today at about 20 feet above normal, the state's worst flooding since 1927. In New York, Governor Kathy Hochul said this week storms dumped up to 8 inches of rain, causing flash flooding in parts of Hudson Valley and Finger Lakes regions. Hochul called it a once-in-a-thousand-year weather event caused by climate change.
Friends, this is the new normal. And we in government, working with our partners on the ground, have to work with our communities to build up resiliency, to be prepared for the worst, because the worst continues to happen.
In Arizona, excessive heat warnings remain in effect, with forecasters warning Phoenix is poised to break its record of consecutive 110 degrees plus days. In Florida, forecasters predict heat indexes in parts of the state are set to exceed 110 degrees Fahrenheit or 43 degrees Celsius by the end of the week. A marine heat wave has pushed ocean temperatures off Florida's coast as high as 96 degrees, more than 5 degrees above normal. On Monday, the World Meteorological Organization reported the first week of July was the hottest week ever recorded on Earth. We'll have more on the climate crisis after headlines and speak with a meteorologist who's quit his job after facing death threats in Iowa for talking about climate change. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli troops shot and killed a Palestinian man Monday, alleging he threw a handmade explosive device at soldiers and fired on them at a checkpoint outside an illegal Israeli settlement west of Ramallah. Eyewitnesses disputed the account by Israel's military, saying 33-year-old Bilal Ibrahim Khada was shot from behind as he drove his car. Witnesses also said Israeli soldiers blocked paramedics from reaching Khada, leaving him to bleed to death. Nearly 200 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli fire this year, including 33 children. In Israel, thousands of people have blocked highways in protest after the far-right coalition led by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu renewed its push to dramatically limit the power of the judiciary. Early this morning, 64 members of Israel's 120-member Knesset voted in favor of legislation that would put strict limits on the oversight powers of Israel's Supreme Court. The bill must still receive two more votes before it can be written into law. At least 10 sit-in protesters were arrested for nonviolently blocking entry to the Knesset ahead of the vote. This is protester Deborah Galili of Tel Aviv.
What this government is doing is not okay. Democracy is under attack. Israeli rights are under attack. The rights of Israeli citizens are under attack. And we're here to protect that and to say stop the coup, stop the judicial coup.
Israeli and U.S. military forces have begun joint exercises in Israel and over the Mediterranean amidst rising tensions with Iran. The war games include live fire drills and the mid-air refueling of nuclear-capable fighter jets. In Tunisia, rights groups are urging the government to stop the mass deportation of sub-Saharan migrants and refugees and to provide humanitarian aid to hundreds of asylum seekers who were forcibly rounded up and abandoned by Tunisian authorities at the Libyan border. Footage published by Al Jazeera shows hundreds of refugees trapped in the heavy, militarized, remote region of Ben Gardein at the Tunisian-Libyan border. Many were forced to drink seawater after days without food or fresh water, and those wounded received no medical care. Human Rights Watch has collected the testimonies of dozens who've said they were sexually assaulted or raped, at times facing abuse from authorities on both sides of the border. Tunisia's president, Kais Saied, has denied the reports, claiming the refugees are being treated humanely. Reproductive rights advocates are gathering in Des Moines, Iowa today as the Republican-controlled state legislature is convening a special session to ban nearly all abortions after just 6 weeks of pregnancy. This comes after Iowa's Republican Governor Kim Reynolds called on state lawmakers to return to the Capitol exclusively to pass the new measure. Current Iowa law allows abortions for up to 20 weeks of pregnancy. In Nebraska, a woman has pleaded guilty to providing her 17-year-old daughter with abortion pills last year and then helping her dispose of the fetus. Jessica Burgess admitted to providing the abortion when her daughter Celeste was 29 weeks pregnant. Last year, Nebraska law still allowed abortions for up to 20 weeks. In May, Republican Nebraska Governor Jim Pillen signed a bill banning the procedure after 12 weeks. Burgess is scheduled for sentencing in September. In related news, the Marine Corps is operating without a Senate-confirmed commandant for the first time in more than 160 years after Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville of Alabama again refused to hold a vote on a nominee over his opposition to the Pentagon policy to cover the travel costs of employees forced to cross state lines to obtain an abortion. Tuberville has for months held up the promotion and confirmation of hundreds of high-ranking generals and admirals, including members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. in Washington, D.C. Protesters are demanding the U.S. government drop its espionage charges against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange and for his immediate release from a British prison as he faces extradition from the U.K. to the U.S. Ben Cohen, co-founder of the ice cream company Ben & Jerry's, and Jody Evans, co-founder of the anti-war group Code Pink, were arrested in the peaceful action last Thursday. Ben Cohen spoke to the crowd as he set fire to a copy of the Bill of Rights, saying, quote, freedom of the press has gone up in smoke.
If the U.S. is allowed to continue this prosecution, the precedent that it sets is that the U.S. can arrest any journalist of any nationality in any country around the world if they print something that the U.S. doesn't like.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
A major NATO summit has begun in Lithuania, in Vilnius, which is located just 20 miles from the border of Belarus. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is scheduled to meet with President Biden at the summit Wednesday as Ukraine continues to push to join NATO. Ahead of the meeting, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has dropped his opposition to Sweden joining the military alliance. If approved, Sweden would join Finland as NATO's newest members. NATO membership would mark the end of over 200 years of military neutrality for Sweden. Sweden and Finland applied for NATO in May 2022, just months after Russia invaded Ukraine. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg spoke Monday.
President Erdogan has agreed to forward the accession protocol for Sweden to the Grand National Assembly as soon as possible and work closely with the Assembly to ensure ratification. Completing Sweden's accession to NATO is an historic step that benefits the security of all NATO allies at this critical time. It makes us all stronger and safer.
For the past year, Turkey's opposed NATO membership for Sweden. Turkey has accused Sweden of giving refuge to Kurdish militants, including members of the PKK. In recent months, Sweden took a number of steps to address Turkey's concerns, including amending its constitution and strengthening its anti-terrorism laws. Turkey is also now pushing to be let into the European Union. As part of an apparent deal, the Biden administration also agreed to move forward with transferring F-16 warplanes to Turkey. President Biden's national security adviser, Jake Sullivan, spoke earlier today.
President Biden has been clear and unequivocal for months that he supported the transfer of F-16s to Turkey, that this is in our national interest, it's in the interest of NATO that Turkey get that capability. He has placed no caveats or conditions on that in his public and private comments over the past few months, and he intends to move forward with that transfer in consultation with Congress.
We go now to Stockholm, Sweden, where we're joined by Susten Barioa. She is president of the Swedish Peace and Arbitration Society, which is 140 years old, one of the oldest peace organizations in the world. Susten, thanks so much for joining us. If you can talk about this major turnaround on the part of Turkey that now allows for Sweden to become part of NATO since they were opposing it, and how you feel about Sweden becoming a part of NATO.
Yes, thank you for letting me join the show today. Well, I feel deeply that this is unfortunate and that this is really a historic mistake of Swedish priorities, because it will neither make Sweden more safe, neither the world, but it can lead, you know, to greater tensions and contribute with more polarization in an already heavily militarized world. So yeah, we are really sad, but it's also a bit hard to understand that this day has come. Our politician has pushed so it's like the first priority of our country to join NATO, and as someone coming from the peace movement, we don't see that that's how we create peace, with the deterrence and more weapons and basing the security policies also on nuclear weapons. That's something completely new for Sweden. We have been a neutral, free from nukes in our country, and we have had a special position in the world, you know, with the 200 years of peace, at least at on our territory. So, but no one is talking about that. This is sad and hasty, and that we haven't had any debate in Sweden. So, there's just many emotions at the same time today.
Well, could you share with us why you think this is happening, given the fact that even at that during World War II, when Europe was being overrun by Nazi Germany, and there was the United States and Britain and France were fighting the Germans, Sweden maintained neutrality then. What is the public sentiment on this issue?
Actually, I think we have some historical shame that we didn't support the right side, that we let the Nazis kill so much, that we were neutral. It's also a side of that, you know, and we also let trains, Nazi trains, pass to Norway. So there is kind of also a shame to this neutrality. And I think the politicians and, of course, some of our population felt we have to be on the right side now when this horrifying invasion of Russia began last year.
And also, in terms of the decision by Finland as well to join NATO, what do you think this means in terms of the increased polarization and divisions within Europe?
I don't know. If Russia is also a European country, which it, part of it is, I think, I mean, this is where we have the polarization right now. And there's, it's just really tough seeing all the world putting so much money into weapons, and also the Swedish weapons industry is making huge profits right now. The demand for arms are huge, as you know. Also, these cluster bombs that we have been working as our organization that to make Sweden sign that they should be banned. But you know, now we enter in an alliance where then the states have not signed. There's right now so many questions that we have not have any time in Sweden to discuss. There's not been any interest of really deeply analyzing what consequences this will have for Sweden in terms of what you're asking about, polarization, what will happen to our conscripts. Will they now defend the whole alliance or just Swedish territory? There's...
Well, and finally, let me ask you before we go, the issue of changing the Swedish constitution and laws around the issue of Kurds in Sweden, so many of whom the Turkish president considers terrorists, but has not been considered until now terrorists by the Swedish government. What 1% of the population of Sweden is Kurdish. About 100,000 Kurds live there. Can you talk about what this means and why Sweden did this at the behest of the Turkish president?
Oh, I think Turkey has held Sweden as a hostage. So it was just one of the demands, you know, that Sweden had to give up to stand up, you know, for the international law. That's been really crucial in our foreign politics before. But we were pushed. I mean, not we, but our politicians were letting Turkey push us in that way. And we also opened up for arms trade to Turkey, which we had a ban on. 1.5 years ago. So there's been such a dramatic shift in Sweden. So it's really a lot to digest, actually.
Well, Søsten Badio, we want to thank you so much for being with us, president of the Swedish Peace and Arbitration Society, speaking to us from Stockholm. This is Democracy Now! As we turn now to the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, who's expected to attend the NATO summit, where he's scheduled to meet with President Biden Wednesday. Ahead of the meeting, Zelensky accused NATO members of ignoring Ukraine's bid to join NATO, writing, "It's unprecedented and absurd when time frame is not set neither for the invitation nor for Ukraine's membership. It seems there is no readiness neither to invite Ukraine to NATO nor to make it a member of the alliance," he wrote today. Well, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg addressed the issue earlier today.
On the membership issue, I also expect that allies will send a clear and positive message on the path forward towards membership for Ukraine. I have proposed a package of three elements with more practical support with a multi-year program to ensure full interoperability between the Ukrainian forces and the NATO forces. This will move Ukraine closer to NATO.
We're joined now by Katrina Vandenhoevel. She's publisher of The Nation magazine and a columnist for The Washington Post. Her recent piece for The Guardian, co-authored with James Carden, is headlined, "Now is not the time for Ukraine to join NATO." Well, if you can comment on all of these fast-breaking developments, from the way being cleared for Sweden to join the military alliance NATO, to Ukraine demanding to be let in now, and the response of the NATO alliance.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Juan. I just wanted to speak briefly about someone who should be remembered, the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme. I'm sure your listeners, your viewers remember he was a true internationalist. He was against imperialism of all kinds, American, Soviet. And he was someone who understood that true security didn't come through the barrel of a gun or a bomb. So there's a lot of horse trading. I think the F-16s to Turkey played a huge role in smoothing the way for Erdogan to go ahead and acknowledge Sweden's role in NATO to accept membership. I do think that Zelensky, as resilient as he's been, as effective in leading his country's image in the world, knows full well, I would think, that the articles, the principles, the very principles of NATO contravene the possibility of Ukraine joining at this point. They would include ethnic disputes, extraterritorial disputes. And I think those need to be resolved before Ukraine is even considered for accession. In terms of Stoltenberg, he's extended his tenure by a year. He is probably one of the, I mean, he talks in weapons. That's his language, as you could hear now. So the militarization of a military institution is something we're witnessing. And it's really all these meetings, with some exceptions, have been about weapons. So one seeks, even at a military alliance, which NATO is, it's not a coffee clutch. In so many ways, it should have disappeared after the Warsaw Pact, the Soviet Union's military alliance collapsed. But it proceeds. But in the President Biden, who has not been clear in so many ways and has shifted goalposts in terms of which weapons may go to Ukraine, was very clear in his interview with Fareed Zakaria on Sunday that Ukraine was not going to receive membership at this NATO summit.
Katrina, I wanted to ask you, President Biden said in an interview with Fareed Zakaria that the U.S. would provide security assistance to Ukraine comparable to what Israel receives. How do you interpret that, and what would that mean in practice?
You know, they are in closed doors right now in Vilnius, Juan, trying to hammer out what that means, what President Biden said. I think there's such pressure to find a way to include Ukraine, but not fully include Ukraine. What I think, you know, there was a conference at the beginning of June in London about reconstruction of Ukraine. One would hope that at this gathering, there would be some attention paid to what may mean $1 trillion for the world community. And what was ponied up in London was something like $15 billion. There are reports now that Zelensky has set up an office in Kiev for economic development, which BlackRock has played a major role in. So I you know, fear that as we witness the militarization and the war proceeding, there's the future of Ukraine is being negotiated in other places. And I do think one wishes that NATO would focus on a more inclusive, but it's not its role, but that there was a more inclusive security architecture that was on possibility, a possibility in this moment, because it's, you know, it's we were talking, or you were talking earlier about the nuclear dangers. These are serious. The environmental dangers. We talked recently about the dam in Ukraine. I mean, this is ravaged territory, not just the thousands of those maimed and wounded and killed by Russian forces and Ukraine versus Russia. So how one begins to find a diplomatic exit is an interesting and beginning, I think, to be discussed in back channels, which is often where things begin.
Yeah, and specifically about those back channels, given the fact that right now in this summit, the elephant in the room is likely not to be addressed, that sanctions haven't worked, that all the military aid given to Ukraine have not been able to push the Russians back, and that the offensive, the much touted offensive that was supposed to be in the spring, then came in the summer, has gone nowhere. But the NATO ministers are unlikely to frankly discuss the lack of progress of their alliance in this war. What about these back channel discussions?
There's no scrutiny. There's no self-accountability, Juan. I mean, the back channels are interesting. I know you've had my colleague on over the years, Peter Kornbluh, talking about the history of back channels. It turns out that in April, former head of the Council on Foreign Relations, Richard Haass, former Biden official Charles Kupchan, and Tom Graham, another Soviet Russianologist, met with Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov in New York and may have had a series of meetings. The White House knew about it, did not sanction it, has been debriefed about it. And it is really the idea of moving from the battlefield to the diplomacy and to the negotiating table. I think that's hopeful. It's one track. It's citizen, you know, track two, track citizen diplomacy. But, you know, part of the problem, Juan and Amy, the reason one of the moves toward cluster bombs is that Ukraine has been going through artillery shells, I believe 2 million, and there are none in the pipeline. And the same issue has arisen with President Biden now possibly renewing these long army long missile attack, the missiles, which Jake Sullivan a year ago said if the United States used, it would lead to World War III. So there's a mission creep that I think we need to pay attention to. When Jan Stoltenberg spoke just recently, you played the tape of interoperability. What that means in normal peace speak is more weapons, more and more weapons that the arms manufacturers will make out like bandits, because NATO countries will have to be in sync, and in sync often means buying U.S. weapons. It's, you know, the militarization of our mindsets, of our approach to security dangers and horrors is a failure. It's been a failure. And the new challenges, as Amy read out, the climate issues and all of that, the nuclear issues, these are not going to be won by horrific, grinding wars of attrition. So we are in a kind of World War I situation with 21st century missiles, ignoring some of the key challenges we really should face. And I'll say one last thing. I mean, in terms of President Biden lecturing Ukraine, I mean, the resiliency of Ukrainians has been extraordinary. But for President Biden to say it's premature, they're not prepared, they have to deal with their corruption, their, you know, problems, we would do well to get our own house in order before going abroad. And that's not isolationism, but it's just reality check that we would do well to do that.
Well, Katrina, before we go, I want to have you make clear the distinction between that Biden is making clear between pathway to NATO and actual invitation to join. I mean, it seems Biden clearly understands, right, the U.S. is the lead one right now in resisting Ukraine becoming a member of NATO during the war with Russia. Because he understands then it means that all of these 32, and if Ukraine joins 33 countries, have an obligation to fight Russia. But all of the benchmarks have changed over time, have fallen away, including